In this episode of Political Ideologies, we'll be talking about conservatism and the principle of tradition. Tradition can be defined as the accumulated wisdom of the past that a culture seeks to preserve. Traditions can encompass a wide variety of things. They can include institutions, they can include customs, practices, parts of religion that may link specifically to that country or to that nation. But the key point being that for it to be a tradition, it has to be something that has developed over a long period of time. Now, when we talked about pragmatism as a principle of conservatism, we mentioned how that encompassed the idea of potentially being flexible or changing ideas in order to conserve a wider or bigger kind of whole. And that thing that conservatives are trying to preserve is tradition. So you may take pragmatic steps to change certain things in order for ultimately traditions to be preserved. So one example being, for instance, when David Cameron legalized same-sex marriage in 2013, that was, although a change or a deviation from what some people may consider tradition, it was actually a way in order to preserve the tradition of marriage as an institution and as a kind of a concept and thing in society. So conservatives may argue against change at certain points, but if they argue vehemently against change, it will be because of an argument that that change is either too rash, it is not a pragmatic slow change or an involved gradual change, or that it kind of threatens a tradition of some kind. So the religious argument for tradition is the idea that society is God-given in some way, that God created all the traditional customs and practices in society. That is how they've been handed down, because at a much earlier phase of human history, you know, kind of God had ordained that these things were the way in which humans should act towards each other. And so if humans try to change traditions, then they are actually challenging or undermining the will of God. And equally, if you believe that traditions are God-given, or that society is kind of being created by God, then you have to have a kind of concept that those traditions and that form of society are perfect in some way, and that you as a human being trying to change God's kind of plan on those traditions or the way in which society runs means that you are going to make society worse via that change. However, the religious argument for tradition essentially got weakened during the Enlightenment, which is a period kind of following the Industrial Revolution, so from 1750 onwards, where rational thinking starts to outweigh religious argument. And, you know, the new kind of inventions that are being created in the Industrial Revolution show or prove that humans or man has the ability to create new things which are better than what the past had. So that kind of argues against tradition in a way. But Edmund Burke, one of our key thinkers, he kind of resolved this with the following phrase. He said that society is a partnership between those who are living, those who are dead, and those who are yet to be born. So this argument means that you can support tradition without needing to argue that it has divine origins, because actually you are explaining the value of tradition by linking it to the fact that kind of your ancestors have created these traditions. They've gradually evolved over time. They are the accumulated wisdom of all humans that have gone before you. So to eradicate all of that in favor of a new idea would kind of go against that principle. G.K. Chesterton, who was a thinker at the early 20th century, he's not a key thinker, but an interesting novelist and essayist nonetheless, he argued that tradition is almost like giving votes to your ancestors. It's a democracy of the dead. And so because the you know, votes of those people who have died before us will always outnumber the people who are currently around today, they should be kind of respected, because it's their ideas, the things that have been kind of created by those ancestors, have stood the test of time and should therefore be preserved for not only the current generation that is alive today, but for the generations that are to come afterwards. A good example of this in the UK is the institution of the monarchy, which is obviously a very kind of traditional way in which to run a country, even though as a constitutional monarchy today, the Queen herself does not really hold much actual power. The argument is that, you know, following the English Civil War in the 17th century and the restoration of the monarchy, it's proved a much more stable form of government to have a constitutional monarchy compared to other countries that had various different types of revolutions. So again, like for example, the 1789 French Revolution or the 1917 Bolshevik Russian Revolution. You know, those revolutions completely cut themselves off from their past, got rid of their monarchies, and created kind of tyrannical regimes that were worse than the ones that they had previously toppled. So the monarchy today for Britain is kind of a sense of national unity, of pride for some people. You know, if you think back to kind of the royal weddings of 2011 or 2018, you know, the kind of hype that was generated from those, and the kind of, you know, flag waving, that kind of stuff, it is a form of kind of collective pride in the nation. Equally, you'll know that the constitution in the UK is unwritten, and the reason that it's unwritten and not codified is purely because of tradition, because it has not been, you know, formally written down before. There are arguments to not start writing it down because it is fit for purposes, it is worked the way in which it is today, and so, you know, the continuity that it creates by maintaining it the way it is means that it shouldn't be changed. There is an element of Darwinian theory here, so that is, like I've mentioned already, the idea of evolution. So Charles Darwin, who in his book The Origin of the Species, you know, argued about the survival of the fittest in nature, relating to kind of, you know, animals and the way in which humans had evolved from apes. You know, that's a theory that was coming out in the 19th century during this Enlightenment period. And so people in political philosophy linked that to tradition as a way to show, well, actually, these traditions have survived for so long. They have evolved slowly. You know, think about the way in which suffrage was expanded at various different points. So, you know, the Great Reform Act in 1832, for instance, you know, slowly changing, slowly giving more people the right to vote over time, but the traditions of the way in which Parliament works were maintained. Interestingly, in the 1990s, when Tony Blair was putting forward the idea of referendums for devolved assemblies in the UK, the Conservatives opposed this idea, and for the House of Lords reform that Tony Blair pushed through as well, to reduce the number of hereditary peers to only 92. So the Conservatives were against this because it was against tradition. The House of Lords is, you know, very traditional. It's almost like the epitome of tradition, isn't it? That you can, you know, have a role in the legislature purely because of your family's, you know, landed gentry title. But the reason behind kind of opposing these devolved assemblies or the House of Lords reform is that they believed that it would undermine the constitutional stability of the UK by creating a mood of uncertainty around who has more or less power in the country. And we're seeing that kind of play out a little bit now, aren't we, with the way in which the devolved assemblies, you know, particularly in Scotland, for instance, are you know, working in ways that Westminster doesn't necessarily agree with at times, for instance, the, you know, issue of a second Scottish independence referendum. An obvious critique for the principle of tradition is whether it's a valid principle at all in politics, because if politics is about creating kind of, you know, change for the future in order to create a better world, then does tradition kind of hinder that by constantly looking back to the past and, you know, think about all the kind of changes that have happened in society 10, 20, 50, 100 years ago? If traditions had truly been maintained and not changed or evolved over that time, then arguably, you know, various you know, positive things that have come from going against traditional traditions, let's say, may have not happened. Nevertheless, there's no doubt that tradition does generate, both for society as a whole and for individuals, a sense of a common identity. You know, people can recognise traditions quite easily. They can recognise them as being part of the nation in which they are from as well. And it links people to their own past as well, and to the, you know, positive and negative aspects of the past together. It creates a sense of belonging, whereas arguably changing those traditions would create uncertainty by kind of journeying into the unknown. So tradition can encompass a wide variety of things, from institutions to much more mundane things like the colour of postboxes. But the key point being that change should always be used to strengthen existing traditions rather than eradicate them.